In her classic book-length meditation on wonder and seeing, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, Annie Dillard writes of the beauty of the earth and of her own connection to it. It's an amazing book. If you haven't ever read Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, or if it's been a while, I suggest you pick it up for some inspiration. Describing the often overlooked marvels that God has planted all through the natural world, Annie Dillard writes, "The world is fairly studded and strewn with pennies cast broadside by a generous hand." Love that. But she says, "These days, who gets excited by a mere penny? Pennies aren't worth much, after all. You can't buy anything with them. They're so useless. There's actually an organization dedicated to advocating for their demise. And the Army has actually already banned their use on military bases. You just can't use a penny on an Army base. Former President Obama and the late Senator John McCain actually agreed on this, that the U.S. Mint should stop producing pennies because the rising price of zinc and copper, with that, it costs a penny and a half to make a single penny, which makes no sense." Sorry. I could go on, shall I? There are a lot of those. But you know, the penny is our oldest coin, and many of us just don't want to see it go. A recent survey showed that 2/3 of Americans would choose to spend the 6.5 seconds it takes to pick up a penny from the ground if they saw one in front of them. I did that last week, last Sunday morning actually, in the auxiliary parking lot just over the path there. Suggest maybe some of you might want to go over there after church and see what you find. Walking from the parking lot to the church last Sunday morning, I looked down, saw a penny, and I put it in my pocket. I guess I'm one of those Americans who supports that survey's findings. There it is. I've had my found penny on my desk this entire week, and I have regarded it as a kind of a touchstone as I've simultaneously contemplated today's scripture passage and begun this spiritually challenging process of clearing out my office. How much do I keep? How much do I give away? What do I value most of all? Now, I admit that this question comes up most frequently when I am looking at my bookshelves. And my answer to this question, I should say, is of particular interest and concern to my husband, who has already built me several bookshelves for our home study. How many more volumes can I really logistically, realistically add? And how many can I add without doing some harm to my own soul? As I've wrestled with these questions and decisions like the rich people in the gospel story who have the luxury of choosing to give to the treasury from their abundance, I've turned back and looked at this shiny penny on my desk, and I've thought less about the meaning of the books and the things that I have around me than about the enduring imprint of the generosity I've witnessed over my years of ministry here. I've thought about young children who, when informed that their Sunday school class was taking up an offering for hungry children in our community, have come back the very next week with their entire piggy banks. I've thought about families with whom we have built Habitat for Humanity homes, who once the home was built, have turned right around the very day, that very day, and given our church an enormous gift. I thought about the guest we hosted last January, a visitor from our prison ministry group, a young man who spoke of his experience of having nothing. Nothing. Nothing but faith. He said, "You don't know how much you need God until God is all you've got." I will never forget that. I won't carry too many books away with me, I've decided, but I will carry these and so many profound moments of inspiration you have given me. I will carry those always. The grace you offer, that is the real treasure. Like pennies cast my way by God's generous hand. God's pennies. Those are the kind of coins the poor widow gives to the treasury. Except they were not even actually pennies. As we know them, they were lepta, the smallest coins in circulation at that time. Take one of our pennies, cut it four ways, you have a lepta. It's not much, but it's everything. It's everything. Though to a culture that prizes the rich and takes advantage of the poor, a culture that values men over women, to religious leaders seeking a name for themselves by making a show of their faith and being seen at the right places at the right times, going through religious motions without religious morality, as William Barber puts it, the widow and her gift to them mean nothing. Her mere existence is hardly acknowledged in their world, other than how it demonstrates her lack of power and serves their power's purposes. She is, in contemporary U.S. terms, just one of 140 million people living in poverty. She is not much. A nameless woman almost everyone else has power over. But Jesus sees her. And to him, she is the most powerful one of all. Because she gives everything. Sometimes, a lot of times lately, it is hard to know what to do. It is mind-boggling to try to figure out how to respond to the overwhelming life and death matters before us and the persistent, loud refrain that devalues each other and creation itself. With wildfires in the west wiping out towns there, hurricanes in the east wiping out towns on this side of the country, yet we continue to behave as if climate change isn't happening. In mass shootings everywhere, 307 this year, on a par with last year. One after the other incident that ends and disrupts lives and creates waves of trauma and fresh grief that burden families and communities around the country. And then the lack of political will to address even the most basic forms of gun control compound the grief. All the issues around immigration, including the exhausted caravan of some of the most vulnerable people in the world, making their grueling way to our border. These tear at our deepest values, and it's hard to know how to respond. So much vitriol turns us one from another, and then we institutionalize that vitriol, try to legitimize and justify the words and the gaps that keep us apart. Instead of preparing a welcome at the border, our government is putting up barbed wire and calling that wire a beautiful sight. A woman who crosses the border between Arizona and Mexico all the time was told about the wire last week, and she teared up and she said, "Perdo, somos hermanos. Somos hermanos. We are brothers and sisters." What can you do to make a difference when it seems we've forgotten this basic humanity, when no place feels sacred anymore, when so many of us who say we follow the way of Jesus act as if we can't remember the most fundamental laws of the faith, laws we just said together a few minutes ago, to love God and to love neighbor? What can we do when it feels we have so little to offer in the face of such colossal evils? We can say to one another, to anyone on the other side of the dividing wire, "You are a beautiful sight. It's you who are the beautiful sight." We can think about that widow and live as if we are on holy ground wherever we go. We can count the pennies God has cast around us and give deep, deep thanks for them, and then open our palms and let them go. Because even the smallest act of grace can change someone forever. We can remember that in the eyes of Christ, we are each so extraordinarily priceless that Christ gave everything up for the love of us. And we can see and do as Christ did.